What's up, everyone? Welcome back to another episode of Buckets and Banter. I am your host, George Marshall, here with my co-host, Jeff Bendel. Jeff, this has been a very good weekend with the start of college football. And my first question to you is, how much are you down going into the recording of this podcast?
Two things. One, don't disrespect me. And two, you're losing your stride as you haven't come, you didn't have a fun middle name for me that time. So
Oh, I forgot that. You're
I
right.
just want to point that out. But you can't go back and amend it now.
I
So
will not go back and amend it. I
that's what
have
you get for your
to
snarky comment.
tighten up.
Enough. How about that?
How was I'll tell you this. The first week, this is like college football has already started. Obviously, there have been games prior to this weekend, but there's really nothing quite like the first weekend of college football being back. To me, obviously, as a Penn State grad, the Nittany Lions are near and dear to my heart. I'm a tried and true. That's going to be, we are all the way. But for me, outside of that, even seeing kind of now in the playoff era, so many high profile matchups early. I don't know if we've seen this type of stuff happen within the course of the last like 2 decades, but certainly in the last 3 years, the number of matchups and high profile matchups have made the first weekend more exciting.
Yeah, I mean, to your point, I even enjoyed the Thursday and Friday matchups before the Saturday, but there's nothing quite like that first noon weekend.
I was kind of stunned by the result of Ohio State, Texas. I mean, maybe I shouldn't have been, and I think that those games can often get overhyped, and especially now that you can have two losses and make the college football playoff, like there's no reason not to take a chance and try and hit a home run early on in the season. But that game did not feel great. I was fascinated by Florida State, Alabama. Would be very nervous for the coaching staff at Alabama given what they went through last year. So that obviously is not a great thing. I asked my dad earlier what he thought it would take to get Saban out of retirement for 2 years to right the ship. And he said $80 million.
Good gracious. Is it even worth it? I can't even
But
spend the money.
they might have the money. But obviously, between football and preseason workouts starting tomorrow for private schools, I'm very happy. I'm very excited, and I think that we're capping it off here with some really interesting topics as well.
Yeah, for sure. Great first weekend. Excited to lose some more money.
Perfect. So here's what we got for you guys today. So we're going to start by talking about what ifs. So outside of just like the common narratives and trends that take place in sports, one of the things that I think is really important as true sports fans is to acknowledge that context matters. And oftentimes what we think about certain situations, trades, free agency, results in seasons, whatever the case may be, it's not what it appears. And so, what we're going to talk about is a couple of our favorite what ifs in terms of mine go high school, college, and pro. I know Jeff focused more on the professional side of things, but there's a lot of different scenarios that truly impact the trajectory of sports, especially basketball. So I'll let you kick it off with some of your favorites. Give us one to start.
Let's start off with the oldest one that I have on my little list here. Anthony Carter's agent completely dropping the ball, leading to a Miami Heat title in 06. Now, how did this happen? Some of you may be even wondering, who's Anthony Carter? Because, you're not an all-star, not a superstar, good player in the league, journeyman, good player. His agent was supposed to pick up a player option for the Miami Heat in 2003. He never sent the paperwork into the league office, never notified the Heat of his intentions. Anthony Carter, assuming he's still on the roster, is thrust into free agency against his better or his will. Well, he had no call in the say. And then that gave them the cap flexibility to then sign Lamar Odom, which was the main centerpiece of the trade that got them Shaq
Got it.
2 years later. So they don't win the title without Shaq. I don't think this is any tales out of school. And, all from a blunder, just a complete oversight.
So was that 2 years prior to the Shaq trade? Is that what you're saying?
Yes, but they signed Lamar Odom in
I
that free
see.
agency period, which they wouldn't have been able to do had they not had that cap space open up from literally him not being able to pick up his player option.
If you think back about like what a crazy situation that 06 finals was, when you
Oh.
think about like Dwayne Wade just being the best player in the world for a span of 2 weeks,
Shooting a billion free throws.
shooting 1 billion free throws, foul merchant prior to there being foul merchants.
True.
That was when Dirk was honestly just at his absolute peak. He was pretty much unguardable at that point in his career. And then Shaq, like, gosh, to go from the Lakers, that was the first year he was on the Heat, was it not? Second year that he was on the Heat. I mean, to make that turnaround so quickly and then to win with another franchise, like, and all of that stems from a blunder from an agent. Do you think that guy still has a job?
That's a great question. I probably should have researched that just to see, because that it, unless it's like your childhood lifelong friend, it's got that's got to be we gotta talk about that. You owe
Yeah,
me something.
that's for sure needs to
This
be
cost me $8 million and yourself 800,000 or something in that ballpark.
discussed. That is truly a horrific blunder, and I'm sure that his family is furious at him. Probably a
Now
few,
I think.
less vacations after that one. Mine is going to be kind of one that is a bit more serious. I got to go Len Bias. I mean, I don't know if I'm sure that everyone has kind of seen highlights, documentaries, whatever the case may be online. You talk about someone who was just simply before his time. I don't believe there was anyone in the league at that point who was his size with that specific skill set. There were players 6'8", there were players 6'9". They were extremely skilled during that time. But to have the vertical ability that he did, to be someone who is from Maryland, to go to the University of Maryland. I mean, it's always going to be such a what if as to like, what if they put that together legitimately? Could they have played him in a lineup on the Celtics where he was the two? Like, talk about being before your time. Now it's pretty common that we see larger lineups and six sevens and, you know, above from the two through five position. But just truly a heartbreaking experience in terms of the what ifs. My high school head coach graduated from DeMatha and Washington in the Washington, D.C. area. And he speaks a bit like everyone in that area at that time knows exactly where they were when that news dropped that he had passed. So to me, I think that that is just an unbelievable what if. And, you know, it's kind of an odd thing that now we're seeing so many players take on that stature with that perimeter skill set. But certainly a player ahead of his time that we all wished had worked out and had seen in the league.
Yeah, massive tragedy. I mean, I think the theoretical greatness that was always talked about. Obviously, I was yet too young, but the film doesn't lie. And you know, people say he rivaled MJ, and he could have been the next great thing. And to think that he was going into a situation that maybe was the best situation that any player could have ever been drafted to in the history of sports. I mean, the '86 Celtics were as good of a team as had that have been in the NBA. And he would have been part of one of those great Celtics teams. So, just to think about what could have been is such a huge tragedy, and the fact that it's never happened really before or after kind of
Right.
shows just the uniqueness of it all. And I think you could even argue like this is the what if of sports what ifs of all sports really, because I mean he was considered to be the next great to rival Michael Jordan throughout that era.
God, can you also imagine what that would have meant for the NBA? Like,
Like another Bird Magic, like not even 5 years later.
but the people who would kind of have to like really guard each other.
Oh, yeah.
Like not the same position, but not totally dissimilar because they're both wing S players, guard wing players. So truly a tragedy, like you said. But that's one that, you know, whenever I see a Len Bias jersey, you know, that your heart goes out to those type of moments for sure.
Definitely. We'll stay on the sad train. Looking at keeping in order with the chronological order here, Derrick Rose's MVP, his injury, all that. What if he never wins the MVP? You know, I think that's often considered a very controversial MVP. He obviously played for the number one seeded Bulls that year. They were great. The team was great, but I think it often gets he as good as he was, the best player on the best team. That's not what the MVP typically stands for. I mean, we saw Russell Westbrook get it as a 4 seed or 6 seed or whatever they were.
Right.
And it's really more speaks to the individual greatness. I mean, he had a team of the defensive player of the year candidate, Joakim Noah, Luol Deng, all star, Carlos Boozer, all star.
Crazy good team.
Very, very good team. And they deserve all the praise that they got. But if LeBron, who we I think all agreed, again, this is not the criteria for the award, but he was the best player in the league at the time. And I don't think that was there's really any discussion about that. Had he gotten it, what would that have meant for everyone's legacy involved? If Derrick Rose then gets injured shortly thereafter, within the
Sure.
next year or whatever, his entire career trajectory is talked about differently. He's not this as great of a what if as he is still. I think people would talk about him more in a Brandon Roy sense or a Yao Ming sense, not as like this perennial potential, excuse me, potential top 10, top 20 player of all time, the potential
Yeah.
best point guard to ever play. I just think the tone would have been a little bit different, and I wonder what that would have looked like. People are still considering maybe has a Hall of Fame case, which he does
Sure.
because every MVP has made the call. But what if that weren't the case? What if he didn't win the MVP? Would he still be a Hall of Famer? It's good.
Right.
It's interesting to think about.
I think that what it makes me think about is, for one, like how astonishingly good he was at his size and his prime. A couple weeks ago, I put him on my top 10 favorite players to watch list. And I do believe that, like, you could pull up Derrick Rose highlights right now, and it's still just an absolute show, especially from high school. But it to me, like, part of what you're saying is, what about like any injury? What if, right? Like, not just D Rose, but like, what does it mean for T Mac? What does it mean for Gilbert Arenas? What does it mean for Grant Hill? What does it mean for like Yao Ming, right? Like, your boy. It's like, those are the types of questions that I think are fascinating. And it really speaks to, like, in the GOAT conversation in general, not enough is paid attention to context. Like, there's so much that goes into the greatness conversation, your health, the organization you're drafted into, the coach that you have within that organization. Is the system, are your teammates going to be? It all comes back to this idea of alignment, which we've talked a lot about in the recruiting process and in transfers recently. But it's the same thing when it comes to those type of conversations. Like, when you think about all of those things taking place, can you knock certain players for making certain decisions? I don't know, but that's neither here nor there. I digress. For me, the next one that I had was about the one and done rule. So I think that it's a fascinating situation as to the NBA trying to solve this perceived issue of high school players going to the NBA and not being prepared for the NBA. I think that we can agree that that was kind of the reason and the rationale for them to want to do that. Did it ultimately solve the problem? No. Did it lead to other avenues for kids to get to where they want to go? Yes, it did. The prep school wave, I think, is a huge part of that. But imagine if you actually had to have some of these great players that went straight to the NBA in college. Like, what if you had, I mean, here are just two that I thought of right off the rip. What if Kobe went to Duke, right? Like, can you imagine what those mid-90s Duke teams would have been? Can you imagine a team of like upperclassmen Kobe with Shane Battier and Elton Brand? Like, I
Ridiculous.
mean, that's an absurd, and that's not even including Corey Maggette, who was also on that roster. What if Amari went to Memphis?
Jeez.
Like, you're talking, like, there's so many players that really just change the game when it comes to that. Imagine Jermaine O'Neal, imagine KG, imagine T-Mac, imagine, I mean, just there's so many numbers of them. What would that have meant for the NCAA, and how would it have impacted the NBA? I think that these are questions worth looking into for sure.
Yeah, and I think to your original point, like their attempt was to try to, I think, help the NCAA and help kind of the farm system, if you will, kind of how baseball has implemented it. And it backfired because then it just led to guys calling the bluff, either one and dunning it, which really didn't do a whole lot for the
Sure.
college athletics or just finding overseas alternatives. I mean, we saw as early as guys like Brandon Jennings were like, I mean, his was a little bit unrelated to that reason, but guys would just go overseas and try other paths now,
Sure.
not bearing results. But it is interesting to think, like, what about LeBron? What about all these guys that just were able, like, Dwight
Yeah,
Howard?
why am I forgetting LeBron? Like, well, how stupid of me. Like,
I mean,
that's
Moses Malone, you could go for on and on and on.
right.
It's just interesting to think about all the select special. I mean, even Monte Ellis. Monte Ellis would have been a great college player too. Tons of guys.
Unbelievable. I mean, what if LeBron went to like Akron and won it all?
I've been still. Hey, let's do that. There you go. That's the question. Could LeBron take a 16 seed to the championship? We would have found out.
If LeBron and his four teammates all went to Akron simultaneously, do they make the Final Four that year?
Great question. It's something I'm gonna have to merit it on. My last one, rounding out my what ifs, I have the infamous Kendrick Perkins amnesty, which for those who don't remember,
So good.
after the lockout happened, every team was granted, given just gift wrapped, a free get out of jail free card, or a one-time get out of jail free card. It's an amnesty clause, basically saying, you can wipe one contract completely off your books. Obviously, you still have to pay that contract, but it does not go against your cap. So at that time, especially with small market teams, that was a huge tool. The funniest, I think it's a worth an aside, the funniest of all these is the Wizards signing Andre Blatch to an extension while having their amnesty clause, signing him to an extension and then using it on him. Thank you. And anywho,
I'm
so
confused, but how does that work?
Washington's dumb. They just tripped over their own feet. They literally signed a player.
So they had to pay him and amnesty him?
Yeah.
Oh my
Maybe
God.
one of the dumbest moves ever, but not quite as dumb as when you have a player like James Harden, an eventual MVP on your roster, and you're paying a obviously the worst of your four or five starters, excuse me, Kendrick Perkins. You can amnesty his contract. You can retain James Harden for the price that he demanded, that submax. Keep Russell Westbrook, who's already been extended. Keep Kevin Durant, who's already been extended. Keep Serge Ibaka, and run it back with those four and whatever else. Whatever
Any
else.
big, any
You
big,
go back in
any big.
2013, 14,
Right.
15. I mean, where is the Warriors dynasty? The Heat wouldn't have had the
That's a
same
great
success.
point.
The Spurs wouldn't have had the same type of success. This is one of the biggest ripple effects. Shea never comes to, I mean, how many what ifs could come from this?
Right.
What is the butterfly effect from arguably the worst thing in history? And also, not for nothing, they got back Kevin Martin, Jeremy Lamb, two firsts and a second round pick. So,
Who'd they turn that into?
pretty sure Steven Adams is one of them. I can look now, but thank you for putting me on the spot with that.
No, but I think that you're 100% right. Like, how different would the conversation around Big Three have been if they had been? Because I mean, you get the LeBron, D Wade, and Bosh situation, right? But like, those three, you had never seen it that young. Where like you all get signed again, you all get to run it back, and really you're put in a situation where in Houston, Harden and Westbrook showed they can play together in the backcourt and be effective. Then you're adding the best scorer of all time in Kevin Durant. I mean, good gracious, like it would have just been an unbelievable. Yeah, but like, but then again, also another what if is what does that mean for them now? Like.
It was Houston. They did take Steven Adams.
Okay.
That was the only one that ever panned out. The other
Okay.
two weren't rotation players.
But you got to think that they're not who they are now if they had that situation back then.
Totally.
So, totally different thing. But the way I'm going to round it out is actually bringing it back to my days at Henderson Collegiate. I talk about this often with former players, and some of them have been posting on their Instagram stories, kind of past pictures of just fond memories and fond togetherness that we had. Really special journeys with those teams when I was there and building that varsity team for the course of 5 years. But The second year that we had a varsity team, as many people know, we were 31-2, and we earned being able to play in the state championship game against Bishop McGinnis. We ended up losing that game by 1 point. It was as heartbreaking a loss as you could possibly imagine. But the what ifs that come back from that to me is it all comes back to what if Cam Brooks doesn't get hurt? Now, the caveat to this, of course, is I have a tremendous amount of respect for Coach Thompson. I think that Bishop McGinnis is a as historic a, it's probably one of the more underrated historic programs in North Carolina, certainly within the past 20 years, because they've won multiple state titles. They've been to the Final Four multiple times. It seems like year in and year out, Coach Thompson is going to have a group of mostly Division II and Division III players who come in and play their roles at an extremely high level. And this was a team that was no different than that. It was a team with great size. They had a lot going for them, good athleticism with Andrew, great guard play, and some big time shooters. But before Cam Brooks got hurt in that game, we were up by, I believe, either 7 or 8 at the time. To perfectly summarize how important he was to that group, they hit a 3-pointer to cut the lead to 5. So everyone's excited. Their student section's going crazy. Cam Brooks drives up the right side of the floor and shoots a 3-pointer from seemingly 30 feet away in the Dean Dome. And he absolutely cashes it. Like, he was just that type of player. He's one of the most underrated players in that geographic area, with certainly within the last 2 decades. And he was a phenomenal player for us in the year that he was eligible to play. Had a Division III opportunity or two, I believe, his way. Averett was definitely one of those, recruited by Chris Sauce, who is now our guy, now associate head coach at UNC Pembroke. But the ripple down effect of that is, and you know this, say that you do end up winning that one. What does that mean just for the next year? Because it's really hard to repeat. It's really easy to be hungry when you don't win everything and you're very close. So, to me, how does that impact the next year's psyche? Now, me personally, I think we run it back anyway. That's just me personally. But what does it mean for 2 years from then, 3 years from then, 4 years from then? What is it? Those are the types of things that I think about often. So, tons of respect to Bishop McGinnis, absolutely taking nothing away. But I will stand 10 toes down that if Cam Brooks is healthy, that is a state championship that goes back to Henderson.
Maybe Cam was a great player, and it's one of those things where, especially at a 1A school, your depth's just not, you don't have that type of luxury to have a ton of guys, so every piece is that much more important. And yeah,
Sure.
losing a key guy like that's huge. As far as you asking about the ripple effect of next year and thereafter, I think we have to personally account for your individual players and kind of the dog that they had in them. I don't know that you
100%.
could ever have counted them out. Whether I don't think that they would have lost that hunger. They just don't strike me as that group of kids. So Javonte Waverly comes to mind. And I know that he would have fought to get back no matter what. But
It
yeah.
was a him, Caleb, AK, Nick Green, the whole nine. So
Oh yeah.
it was a great starting five that ran it back again for
Good
sure. And
times.
I have others written down here in terms of role players for that group, but for the sake of time, we'll get into the next section. So the next section is one we're really excited about. Our top fives this week are going to be about sports movies. Initially, and again, these are not like the best sports movies. These are our favorite sports movies. I could have gone a lot of different directions with my choices. I know that Jeff also could have done the same, but these are our favorites, meaning to me, this is how this is defined. If it's on TV, I'm watching it, period. Like that's just kind of the way that it is. If it's a situation where I'm bored, I might hit it up on Netflix. Like, it's one of those ones where I'm always going to come back to it. So I'll start with mine and then we'll kind of just rattle it off from there. But I'm going to go kind of just like off the wall to start. I'm going Rocky IV. Very important distinction, Rocky IV. You got the Ivan Drago dynamic. You're in the midst of the Cold War. You got the Russia USA thing. You got everything, like you got Apollo Creed getting assassinated in the boxing ring. Like, to start the entire thing, throw the damn towel. Like, you've got all these things going, and then the training sequence for Rocky. That's the most hype part of that entire thing. And then the one scene that really, and I know that we want to go through these a little faster than this. The one scene that no matter when it's on, I could literally watch it on YouTube right now and then go and pretend to run 2 miles and collapse after 15 steps is he's cut. He's cut. It's a bad cut. When Rocky gets the cut on Ivan Drago and the tides turn in the match. Oh man. Absolutely phenomenal.
Nice. Yeah, no, not a personal fan of the Rocky series. I think it's just my age. I don't know, they were popular when I was young. They were kind of boring to me, but maybe one I'll have to go back and watch. I have heard that's widely considered like the best one in the series though. My first one, I probably watched this movie, I don't know, upwards of 1,000 times, especially when I was younger, Coach Carter. I just think it's the best basketball movie ever made. I don't know what there is to talk about. It's got everything you want. It's got fun. It's got breaking rules. You got kids learning about basketball. You got different dynamics. You got every type of archetype you could want. And
Your
plus,
older brother Channing Tatum is in it, so that helps.
just and the fact that it's a true story. Obviously, things have been altered for movie effect, but the fact that it's a true story. Chris Sauce, we'll mention him one more time, has met Ken Carter, and
Really?
and has actually talked about him and said they got everything right in the movie except I'm better looking than Samuel Jackson.
That's great. That's fantastic. Second movie for me, I'm going The Replacements.
Okay.
Super underrated football film. Totally outlandish. You got Keanu Reeves living on a boat, coming back and playing in the perceived professional football league of whatever it is. You got Gene Hackman wearing the plaid suit mixed in with the top hat. Like, the whole movie is just absolutely freaking ridiculous. The deaf tight end, like the kicker from England who's got gambling problems. Like, there's so many just random things. And at the end of the day, Gene Hackman telling Keanu Reeves, winners always want the ball. Like, something along those lines that's just like, why am I motivated by this absolutely ridiculous film? Pure comedy, absolutely phenomenal.
Great one. My next one, I'll go with Miracle. In my opinion, the best hockey movie ever. Not that there's a whole lot of candidates, but again, based on a true story, what improbable likelihood of us to beat Russia? Again, goes back to your Rocky Fourth thing. All the stuff that was going on off the ice, off the court, all that stuff. It just made it that much better. One of the greatest speeches of all time,
Yes.
by Coach Herb. Just a great movie.
In an unrelated hockey note, we should analyze the country selection within the movie D2, The Mighty Ducks, when they're going to the Junior Olympics in Los Angeles. Like, some of the countries that they pick in group play, most notably Trinidad and Tobago, second most notably Italy. Like, guys, I think we could have tried a little harder.
Got a little bit more north, Icelandic type.
Well, again, the rival of Iceland, you kind of get, but I can confirm having an Icelandic player at TBS, that's not really their thing. They don't really give a crap about hockey. So altogether, great film, but it's also not on my list. So here's the next one. Next one for me, I'm going
Nice.
Friday Night Lights.
Movie
Maybe
Miles.
Miles, give me the whole crew. I mean,
Mike
that
Winchell.
story, the story of the Permian Panthers, if you've read the book is phenomenal. There's so many like follow-ups, HBO 60 Minutes about the story of that team and what it meant to that community. But you just gotta love that vibe of what Friday Night Lights is and high school football on a Friday. I would say that when you get into the Georgia, Texas, Florida type of deal, you can tell that it's a little bit different. You can tell just by the stadium size. I saw that a school in Georgia recently built a 10,000 seat stadium. A little bit different out there, but The vibes are still true in North Carolina as well. So love the whole high school like storyline that they gave. Very underrated performance by Tim McGraw. I think that that's important to note.
Okay.
But yeah, just a great film overall.
Nice. All right. My next one, I'm gonna go White Men Can't Jump. I
Classic,
think
classic.
one of Woody Harrelson's best movies, as many as good ones as he's been in, and one of Wesley Snipes' best movies. And I think it's even more comical when they tell you how he had to learn how to play basketball.
So funny,
Yeah,
yes.
just wild. And then you go back and watch him, it's like, no, it's pretty obvious. He can't really dribble, and the jump shot's funky and all that stuff. So
Did you also hear in an unrelated thing to White Men Can't Jump that in the movie Major Leagues, they had to do his scenes in slow motion because he was actually slow? So, like, in order for it to look like he's fast in that movie, they had to do his scenes and they're all in slow motion when he's running.
never knew that. That's amazing.
Sorry to interject, but
No,
that's also not one of them.
I was just saying that's one of the great ones. Rosie Perez, shout out to, will go on and win Jeopardy.
Killer. That was such a that's an epic scene. That's absolutely so epic. I'm gonna go Moneyball. Give me
Love it.
Billy Beane. Give me the Oakland A's. You know, any coach that's coached teams that are kind of going up against something challenging, you kind of have to buck against the system. I love when he's going to the interview with the Boston Red Sox, and the Boston Red Sox owner says something like, the first man through the wall always gets bloody. So, like when you're trying to change things or there's struggle or anything like this, there's always going to be those times where you're getting knocked down when you're trying something new. But talk about a game-changing thing. I will say one of the things that they don't talk about in that movie, which they should have, is the fact that they probably had the best pitching lineup in the MLB.
Barry Zito, and what was it?
Hudson, you had
It's
Zito.
Hudson.
I mean, in general, like when you have a big three of pitching, you're gonna have a chance. So it's like it's just one of those things where maybe we should have mentioned that a little bit. Also, I didn't appreciate no mention really of Miguel Tejada in the film. Like, thought you could have thrown that
Eric
in there.
Chavez.
Right, 100%.
Well,
But
and that was interesting too, because it's like the movie, obviously it's a movie, so they changed a lot of the
sure.
realistic things that happened or didn't happen in real life. But one of the funny things is, like, imagine being a scout for this team. You've scouted and you've brought in all these young guys, Barry Zito, Tim Hudson, Eric Chavez, Miguel Tejada, and then you have a guy who brings in his assistant and says, yeah, we're not doing any of that anymore.
Right.
We got a new plan. It's like, but we're getting good players.
Yes,
I'm just saying,
in theory, yes. I totally understand what you're saying,
don't
but
try to break it down logically. Just look at the humor of it.
I do look at the humor of it for sure. Go ahead with what is this for you?
Yeah, I would go with Glory Road. I think as good
Solid.
a basketball movie as anything other than maybe Coach Carter, and much more of, I think, on the serious side of things, where obviously you have the racial aspect of it, and just how groundbreaking that was, and how difficult, especially at that time, it was for a coach, and obviously the kids involved, and the players in the African American community in general, and how much that tried to relay. Just, those are things that I don't think most people saw on a day-to-day basis. So it's like,
Sure.
man, that was reality for a lot of folks, especially back then. So, but another great one.
It's also kind of a reality check in the sense of like the fact that he was living in the dorms, that is not an untrue thing. Like that is something that happens for young coaches when you are trying to break through the coaching profession. And that sucks and it's difficult, but it is one of those situations where like that's real. And it may not be the head coach now, obviously, for financial reasons. You know, if that was the situation, I think the school would be, you know, that would they'd probably not be hiring very often, or maybe they'd be hiring a lot, actually. But it's a situation for them where it's like, you know, that is a very real and relatable thing. My fifth one was He Got Game. Absolute classic. Jesus Shuttlesworth, Denzel Washington, Spike Lee joint. Like it's really as good a when you're talking about like basketball cult movies, that's the movie. You know what I mean? Like when you go back and watch, like what is a historic thing? Talk about a tremendous job by Ray Allen playing that role and playing a part. Can you name the other professional player in his backcourt in that film?
I haven't watched the movie in a long time.
Travis Best is also in that movie, and he is
Wouldn't have
on
the
the
answer out of me either.
Lincoln the Lincoln High School two guard, I believe, is what his position was for that film. But just an absolutely phenomenal film. And talk about like kind of ahead of its time, where I know that you're going to talk about one in a second that is really ahead of its time because that was filmed even before He Got Game was filmed. But like when he's going through the conversation about, I can't say it here because there's a level of, professionalism that we have to have within this space. But
We choose to have. We don't have to be professional.
no, but just the things that are on college visits, what happens to top level athletes? That is the professional way that I
Right.
can say it.
Patino.
Yes, thank you for that.
Don't look up Rick Patino at Louisville. My last one rounding out my list, to your point, way ahead of its time, is Blue Chips. The movie, I think, is close to
Awesome.
30 years old now, and it's as true today as it's ever been. I think
Right.
now it's legal, so it's not as like the movie itself doesn't really have a whole much of a basis, but it's just interesting that goes to show that crooked dealings have been happening in collegiate athletics for Lord knows how long, and boosters and money and point shaving and kids being paid and all that stuff. So, again, a movie, but a lot of truth to that stuff, especially now.
100%, and there's no way that this has not been thought about for 50 years, probably even longer. There's documentaries, there's 30 for 30s about this happening long, long ago. But the film, I think, does an excellent job of portraying some of those things. Can't forget about Shaq's character. Absolute classic. Neon Bideaux, is that his name in the film?
Yep.
Yeah.
And Butch McRae, Penny Hardaway.
Butch McRae is fantastic. Love when they go to the Catholic school and he's just going crazy, throwing it off the
Mama
glass
Job.
reverse. Yep. Tremendous, tremendous stuff. All right. Now that we've got movies and top fives out of the way, we've talked a little bit about our what ifs. The next topic that we're going to get into is the culture of pickup basketball. I really was excited to talk about this because in our last conversation, when we were going over players in the 28 class, and we brought up AJ and we brought up Kahari, those are two guards to me that really have shown that they are not cone babies. And in this world of training, I think it's important to acknowledge that training is something I wish that I had had more access to growing up as a player because there are very real benefits to it, especially for your skill and your confidence going into games. And elite trainers who translate what you do well into the way that you're used in a game are as top tier as it comes. And I think that they deserve a tremendous amount of praise. That being said, to me, you cannot replace what it is like to simulate 5-on-5 action. Doesn't matter what you do, whether it's 5-on-5, whether it's 3-on-3, whether it's twos, whether it's fours, whatever the case may be. Pickup culture was an enormous part of basketball when I was growing up. And so I'm excited to kind of hear your take on this because, for one, I think the first thing we got to ask is where is it gone? What has happened over the course of maybe COVID, maybe even prior to that? That has led to this just significant downturn in getting kids out ready to play the game, at the various gyms across their community.
Sure. I mean, I don't really have a whole lot of things to say about this. I do think there are a couple of reasons and a couple of things that I question. I know personally, I go to Prolific every day, Prolific Park here in Greensboro, and I can't tell you how many times I've seen kids who are doing drills with no defender or drills against a trash can when they have a defender. They have other players
There's
there.
other people in the workout.
There's no, yeah, or there's no pickup, even if it's not a workout. I mean, there's these guys, these kids are just coming up and doing drills voluntarily when they have four guys. When there's four guys, that means two
Twos.
on two.
Twos, baby.
What are we doing?
Twos.
There's three, we're playing 21, or we're playing King of the Court. We got two, we're playing ones. Like, I don't know where that went off either, because yeah, that was exactly what it was when I was growing up. If you had enough kids, you were playing that number of players. You were going to play no matter what.
Sure.
I wonder if it's just different times. You say COVID. I wonder if kids are just different now. I wonder if kids just don't want to compete as much. I wonder if there's just less kids with that level of drive. Because I think that there are so many more things that you can have at your disposal, whether it be whatever interest you may have as a kid. So there's not this bloodlust, bloodthirst to make it and to be at the highest level of competitiveness. I also think about how kids are always worried about getting hurt. And that is just a thing that I never worry about. I don't know. I can't, I imagine you didn't worry about. That's just not something I ever worried about. I never thought about, hey, let's play ones, let's play twos, let's play threes, let's play fives, whatever. And ever being like, nah, I can't do it. I can't worry about getting hurt. I would play, and then you get hurt, and then you deal with repercussions. You don't anticipate injury and work and move in fear. I think that's a big thing too.
Yeah, I think that I have vivid memories of like breaking this pinky finger that was broken during a pickup game in college that just super intense. It happens. Like it looked like a Z, had to get it splinted up, like the whole nine, and you just kind of play through it. Like it is a different era in that way. But one thing that I will say, and you just said this, and I actually don't agree with this. I don't think that this generation is softer. I
I didn't
think
say softer. I didn't say softer.
you said less competitive,
Yeah.
but I don't know that I would agree with that. I think that it's impossible to know that without putting them in the vessels where they see the value in those things. And so for me, the reason that I wanted to bring up pickup was because what I valued most about pickup is like there is such a clear distinction between what is celebrated now versus what was celebrated when I was in high school and I was in college. Because when you played and you didn't have cameras in every gym, or you didn't have access to training the way that you had it, and I'm not knocking, like, I don't want people, like, there's coaches on my staff who are trainers and do this thing for a living and are great at it. Like, I'm not knocking that. I'm just saying that for me, your bragging right was how many games you won. And when you start thinking about the way that you had to focus on winning, sometimes that meant I might have a mismatch and I have to be the guy that scores the most. But other times it may mean I better set this away screen for the better shooter on my team. And there was never a time when I would ever, let me rephrase, I don't want to say never. There were a lot more times when I would try to roll into a gym with five than I would try and roll into a gym with just myself or with two. And there was real culture in that. At Penn State, the intramural pickup games were so elite. Like it's hard to put into words how good that experience was because you walk into the intramural building, you go right to the left down the hall, everyone knows it. You walk into the gym and there's three courts. The first court there, it's all the football players, it's all the basketball players, and it's all the guys that want to compete against them. So if you lose on that court, you're done for the day. That's it. There is no extra. You're done because it's a six game wait for you to get back on. Then you have the people beefing with each other to say, well, I had next. Well, I had double next. Well, I had next. It's like, all these things are crazy. Then you go on the second court. The second court was the like, hey, we're really competitive. We had great high school careers. We don't want to be on that court for today. Or the runs are so, there's too many. So we have to go to the second court just to get cardio in and just to play. And the third court was the one if you wanted to warm up. And like that was very rarely any issue there. You play on that when there's like lunchtime runs or things like that. But if you were winning on the first court, like there, if you win three in a row there, that's bragging rights for a week. Like Saturday runs in the spring were a thing. Like it was a real deal. And so I just have such fond memories of developing my game and my IQ and talking trash and competing and going back and forth. And, I wish that there was a bit more of that instead of, oh, well, I played 5-on-5, but, I scored this many points. Like, I'd like to get back to the place where it's like, no, I won five straight. I rattled off seven straight. Like, those are the things that I think kind of prove your point, if I'm
Yeah, I was
asking.
going to say, I think in an effort to disagree with me, you actually agreed with me more. Talking about how kids don't care about bragging rights. That's being competitive. Kids, and also, I think I'm speaking more to just the general kid. I'm not talking about most of these kids that are going to play in college. I think you ob these they obviously have to have some level of competitive drive. I'm more so speaking on just the general kid. I don't think the general kid is playing three, four, five sports. I think that was a much more common practice when we were kids and when you were kids. I think that's what I'm saying. I'm talking about in just general competitiveness, general competition, everything. I don't want to lose at anything. I want to win everything. Anybody that doesn't want to win at everything wired differently than me. And I blessing and a curse. I think it's, but I think that that's kind of, it trickles into kids nowadays. I think that there's just a less of a desire to be competitive.
Yeah, maybe. I didn't want this to become a level of like generational competitiveness competition or a conversation.
My generation's way more competitive than yours. We're tough.
Well, not than mine. Let's just get
I'm,
that clear.
whoa.
That's different. But no, I think that, part of it though is like, how are we creating atmospheres for these things to take place? We try at the Burlington School to be very diligent with this during preseason workouts. Like when you get into the season, practices aren't as focused on 5-on-5 full court stuff. You're more working on your sets, you're more working on your defensive principles. Sometimes you'll get into like transition drills where you have to do it and this, that, and the third, but like when we're in preseason, like we're after it. Like I want coaches to come into our gym and see, like, no, these are like like who's winning four straight? Like, and some of the stories that you have are, that are just so fantastic, especially from the best of the best players in the world, the NBA players. Is there anything more epic than the Jimmy Butler story in Minnesota? The bragging rights like that, it's honestly like that's better than you winning a scoring title. Like there's more bragging rights in you being in a situation where you took a lesser quality team and won against the starters. Like there's so much weight that is carried in those moments. I just hope that we can get to a place where we can get back to it. And I don't know how that is. I don't know if there's gyms across the community that can create a safe space for this. If there's lunchtime runs that happen for adult leagues, I think an adult league is a good thing, but that generation has already benefited from playing pickup. What are we going to do to kind of solve it for this new generation? I think is very important.
Yeah, definitely a good question to ask. I don't know. As far as adult leagues go, the last adult league I played in had to get shut down because of too many death threats. So,
Awesome.
yeah,
Maybe
adult.
that's why kids don't play pickup, is because your generation is not smart enough to not make death threats to people
Hey,
whenever they're
George,
playing the
it was
pickup
a guy
game.
your age, but you
I'm
got it. Got it. You know what I'm talking about, but.
sure that I do. I'm sure that I do. I also think that there's a connection between 5-on-5 stuff and half court stuff, whether it's twos, threes, fours, and your IQ. I
Ball
think
movement,
that
off ball movement.
The culture of bag work does not lend itself well to pick up basketball, because if you're playing with someone older and better and you're trying to get into your bag and you're losing, oh my God, this you better just walk out the gym right then, because you're gonna hear about it. If you take a bad shot with an old head, they're gonna tell you about it. Like those, but those things made you a better player. I miss it personally. I really do miss it.
Me too.
Don't know when it will come back, but I'm open to any conversation to try and get it to do so, specifically in the Alamance Greensboro area. Can you imagine like pickup games with the level of high school talent we have in this space? Like, God, it would be unbelievable. You could do like a high school version of Rico Hines open runs in California.
I know Jalen went to a bunch of those, Isaiah too, like Jamari and Isaiah and Quell and a lot of those guys. They have a lot of runs around this area frequently. But yeah, it's good to see a lot of the better kids in the area still doing that. So hopefully it does
Sure.
pick back up.
Well, those kids, it makes sense given where they went.
Right. Yeah.
Like maybe if you're not in a place where you need to be, you focus a little more on playing some more team basketball.
I agree.
I mean, this is not rocket
Proof's
science.
in the pudding.
The proof is in the pudding. Let's
Got some
see.
heat.
Let's see. Jamari Thomas is, player of the year in the MEAC and then goes to South
It's high
Carolina and
major.
now is high major. I don't know, but he loves doing that. And I don't know. Man, what do I know? I'm just a lowly high school basketball coach. I don't know a thing.
Emphasis on lowly.
Correct. Emphasis on lowly. All right, sound offs. I'm excited for yours, mostly because I have no idea what it is. And
Yeah,
then
me
I'm
neither.
equally excited for mine. So let's rock and roll. You start it off and then I'll finish it up.
So in lieu of our rankings being released here in the next
Oh, baby.
few days,
Oh, baby.
a week or so, I just want to always I'd love to take this time, instead of writing an article and acting pretentious, I just please implore people to just remember these don't really matter. Like, this doesn't, like, it's fun. It's a fun exercise. People care about it. But in the end, this has no impact on your child's ability to perform, develop anything. These largely mean nothing in the bigger picture. So it's important to take these with a grain of salt. Remember that this is based off of viewings, sample
Right.
size.
Right.
It's hard to have an opinion about a kid you've not viewed or a kid that you've only seen play poorly. So it's just important to remember, as we always try to enlighten guys or folks, to remember context is important.
Yep.
And it's impossible to see everybody. And it's always a thankless task, but we are hopeful that people will be appreciative of the rankings that are coming out.
I think that there is a 0% chance that people will be appreciative.
Correct.
I think that it is a very kind way of saying what you want to say. But I also think that, one thing that I wish more people, like, I value rankings in the sense of like that level of competitiveness that we just talked about. I do think that college coaches look at them. I don't think that college coaches put the stock into them that people think they do. And I think that it's like a general sense of, I mean, I've said this many times, like it's a head-to-head matchup for me. Like if there's someone ranked one and you're ranked four, line it up. Like don't duck the competition, go line it up and see who wins and then call it a day. Like, or go back and get better and then try and compete at another time. To me, the rankings just make me think about like the depth of talent in North Carolina as a whole, because especially when you start talking about seniors who could be ranked outside of a top 100, who I've seen play and been like, oh, like they can go. Like that's a college player. Like those types of things I think are really cool. But I mean, I know you guys deal with it a lot when it comes to that. Just stay on the good path. It's part of your job. People are going to get pissed. It kind of just is what it is.
Well, and it's also important to remember a lot of this has to do with stylistic preference.
Right.
And then at a certain point, not every kid is going, we're not ranking from high major to low major. So it's not a gigantic gap. A lot of these kids are the same level. So you have a lot of what's the preference there? What have we seen versus what do we project? What's already been,
It's
so.
really tough to do overall rankings compared to like positional rankings too.
Sure.
Like that's I think
But
what's
what's a point guard nowadays? I mean, do we have five
no,
in North Carolina?
I know that in your rankings there are a few, and I think you
I'm
would agree with that.
I agree, but my point being is the term like a point guard. What's a point guard versus shooting guard combo guard? We
Kind
don't have
of.
1,000 combo guards.
Right. No,
But
I
anyway,
get it.
I digress.
My sound off today is entitled Stop the Cap. I am to a point now, and I have been guilty of this in the past. This was inspired by a friend of mine in this profession, which is Whit Holcomb-Fay. And I think last year, Forsyth Country Day had the best hashtag rallying cry of anyone in the state of North Carolina, which was hashtag we still sorry. They proceeded to win upper 20 games. They went to the Final Four. They were one of the best teams in North Carolina, having lost pretty much their entire roster from a year where they won the state championship. Now they have this influx of talent. And this is not just about Forsyth. It's about, in general, guys, like we have to stop the cap. Not every team is being disrespected. Like Forsyth and Witt, I've already gone back and forth with you as a joke on Twitter. Like he's one of my, you know how highly I hold hit the high regard I hold him in.
We all do.
That being said, you're not disrespected in
I
any way. In fact, I would argue you're closer to the top five of all teams in North Carolina now than you are to being disrespected. I think that the false narrative of disrespect is silly, and more teams are doing a heck of a lot better than they think they are.
Nice.
There you go. Stop the cap. All right. Not really sure how this episode will be taken, but we'll see how it goes.
Not cap.
Yeah, that's not cap. That is a fact. But in general, really excited to start the official preseason for private schools tomorrow. A lot of good things going on. Thank you guys for tuning in. I'm sure that rankings are going to be coming out soon for Phenom, so you can anticipate at least somewhat of a conversation for that whenever that takes place. And we'll just continue to push forward, and we appreciate everyone for their support. We'll see you guys soon.